And he said that he was reading a book about how to write musical theater while he was writing this musical.
Oh.
And in that book, they said the one story that shouldn't be adapted into a musical is Jane Eyre.
Oh my God. And he threw that book out the window. He's like, well, fuck you, because I'm already doing it.
He goes, well, that would have been nice to know 15 years ago anyway.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Hello, Lillian. Are you feeling musical today?
You know what? If I'm totally honest, I'm not feeling the most musical I've ever felt.
What? Musical didn't blow you away and inspire you to sing everything that comes to your mind?
Yeah, not entirely. I did.
I
also just think it's a tough one because I think the news is bumming me out pretty hard these days. So in order to make me feel a little bit more musical, I wanted to share something that was sent to me this week. And for our listeners, Piper is about to see a picture. You guys can go to our Instagram or our Twitter or our website. This is going to be everywhere on the internet, I'm sure. But I saved that. This was sent to me by my brother's girlfriend, Holly, who just emailed it to me with the only context being Bonnet Watch.
Oh.
So Rob found this, my brother Rob. And for the fans of our show, we have a segment called Bonnet Watch where we talk about the bonnets of Jane Eyre. And deep in the archives of my childhood was this photo, which is...
Yay! Oh my gosh, the prophecy fulfilled.
This is a picture. I said that I had a bonnet as a child.
Cute.
I meant it.
Oh,
and thanks to our amazing loyal listener, Holly, we now have that picture.
That's amazing. Wait, Nate, I need to describe some things about what I'm looking at here.
Okay. Do.
So it's a wonderfully charming family portrait of Lillian, her two brothers, and her dad. That's your dad, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Standing next to a, looks like a Civil War cannon. And Lillian is like, she's doing kind of a cool little lean off to the side, distancing herself from the weapon in her family. She's wearing a little pink bonnet and has an American flag shirt. And then her pink pants are rolled up to the knees to make them into shorts. Because I imagine she's too hot and that's what she had to do to deal with the temperature.
He showed this to my little brother Patrick this week and was like, look at what I found, or look at what Rob found more specifically. And it just, he pointed out how tightly the bonnet is tied on my head.
It's very tight.
So tight. And my first thought was like, oh, that's like what a little kid thinks you need to do. And I'm like, no, I would bet money that my mother tied it that tight, because I was like, I was the kind of child who would full sprint places. Like, I was always going, and there was no way that bonnet was going to stay on. And she knew that I would cry if it got lost. So it had to be tight, maybe.
See, it's the getting lost thing that comes to my mind, because similarly, I was someone who every single winter lost multiple pairs of mittens and gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents thought they found a solution when they got those stylish little like clips where you clip one mm-hmm. end to your coat and then one end to the mitten. So if the kid takes the mitten off, it is attached to the clip. But that didn't work because they bought me Tweety Bird clips. And so I was like, ooh, Tweety Bird. And so I flung off the mittens attached to them and I used the Tweety Birds as like little toys. And my parents were like, where the hell are your freaking mittens? And I'm like, I don't know. I wanted to play with the Tweety clips and now they're gone.
So no one could have seen this coming.
Exactly. So yeah, if I was your mother, definitely tie that thing double knotted under the chin.
Oof. It's just so, and also in this picture is my little brother wearing a little Union Civil War hat. This was during a phase in all dad's lives where he got really into the Civil War. And so we went on a family trip to visit Civil War battlegrounds. And I believe I was supposed to be firing this cannon because it is pointed right at my brother Rob's face. But I also love that the look on my face in this picture, I would describe as me, little me, looking into the future, predicting this moment where I have a podcast where it's relevant that I share this picture because she, her eyes are so big, little me's eyes, so big. And she's just sort of like, I guess we're doing this now, huh?
Lillian, it's a face that you still make today when you're just kind of like, oh, uh-huh, really? I've seen this look on your face many times, so.
Just everything about this picture is a little girl who thought she was killing it and was like, but we don't need a picture of it.
Oh my gosh. Also, it must be known, your dad is rocking a full-on dad look with the dad shorts and the button-up shirt tucked into the shorts. So yeah.
Keep dad on vacation for sure. He's got, it's a short sleeve button up that goes all the way to his elbows.
tucked into the shorts.
That is a dad on vacation at a Civil War monument with his family in 2004.
I love it. I love it so much. Well, the reason I asked if Lillian is feeling musical is because the adaptation that we watched for this week is one of at least several Jane Eyre musical adaptations.
I think there's just two. Is there more than two?
I've come across two. I would not be surprised if other people have attempted to do this, but
find out Secret More Jane Eyre is sort of like the whole, my entire life right now is being like, what do you mean there's more?
So unfortunately, this was not the Broadway version. This is some off-Broadway made in Utah. I don't know if that's where it came from. The version we saw was recorded in Utah.
It was that, and that was the premiere. So it premiered in Utah. I listened to an interview or part of an interview of the playwright, musical right?
Mm-hmm. Playwright. Yeah, I think that works. Yeah.
Okay. And he was backstage with the cast. And he was talking about his experience with that, and I'll have more information on him and his whole deal later.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm very excited. So yeah, I pulled up when I was watching this, we have a recording on YouTube that we watched, and I Googled, Jane Eyre soundtrack, and the Broadway soundtrack popped up. And so I had the song list on my screen, and I was watching the show, and I'm like, these songs, they're not saying the words that are the titles of the song. I don't think this is right. And then I found out that it's two different things. So I was a little confused there, but I did go back and start listening to the Broadway version, and it is amazingly better. This guy did his best. Like, it's a nice attempt. I don't think it was a bad show, but it wasn't an amazing show. But someday we'll talk about the Broadway version, and then we'll have some great things to say, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's just so much there, huh? What I loved about it was, I was like, why am I like so confused? Like, why don't these have like more distinct different references? And honestly, I should have known, because the original Jane Eyre musical was written in 2000, premiered on Broadway in the year 2000, and was called Jane Eyre the Musical. Mm-hmm. This had a completely different title, which was Jane Eyre the New Musical.
This guy went on a trip to New York, saw it on Broadway, and he's like, I can do that a little better.
Or more likely, a little worse.
Yes, definitely.
I'm so sorry, sir.
Lillian, do you want to try and give us a real quick recap? In case no one has ever read Jane Eyre before and they thought, you know what, I'm going to try a Jane Eyre podcast and see what it's all about. Let's find out what this musical has to tell us about the story.
Yes, I'm so excited. I forgot that it was my turn to recap, so I didn't prepare at all. Let's see how this goes.
Great. I'm ready when you are.
All right. So we open on a sad little girl and a bunch of people singing about how shitty she is. And then there's another song singing about how shitty she is. And then there's a third song singing about how not shitty she is. And then she grows up and she works at the school where the people who sang about how shitty she is also work. And then she goes to be a governess. House, and there's a bunch of songs there too that are all about how she's going to keep going forward. And she meets some people, some of whom we've never met before. And then multiple people fall in love. Her aunt dies. She goes and hangs out with some people who sing about how she's really meant for labor. Oh, by the way, the man who she worked for, she fell in love with, and he has a lady in the attic. We knew that. then the labor thing happens, and then she goes back, and the man she was in love with still loves her. They sing a song to each other, and then they all sing about the journey. And that's the whole thing.
Boom. 1 minute, 8 seconds.
I can't believe it was that long and I skipped so much.
The singing about people hating her thing, I think that's a great way to start, right? I think, so one of the things that I'm going to be really focusing on in this particular analysis is there are certain like elements of musical theater that I think we need to bring into consideration here when we are making our assessments. Mm-hmm. So there are different types of song format that I was trying to identify when watching this. And I feel like this guy maybe didn't study musical theory super well before he wrote his musical, because like some of the two kind of crucial songs that you get in a musical is there's usually the opening song, which is either an I am song or an establishing song, in which case either the main character or the ensemble sings a number to establish the world that we are currently existing in. This one opens with people singing about how they hate this girl and how she's really sad. And I'm like, I mean, I guess that's kind of a establishing I am song. But I also at first felt it had sort of I want song energy. And so the I want song is typically the kind of the thing that kicks everything off of the main character has so much like feeling inside of them that they sing this big I want song. Think to yourself a classic Renaissance Disney movie in which, you know, Ariel wants to be in the world above and Jasmine wants freedom and all kinds of other stuff, you know, whatever somebody's like, this is what I want to do, then that's their I want song. And her I want song was this kind of like journey on thing, but it didn't really feel that like wanting. It felt kind of more just like, hey, it'd be nice if I wasn't here anymore.
Yeah. The note I have on that song, because that is the song that is, oh gosh, what's it called when the song is played again, but slightly different?
Oh, there's a reprise.
Reprise. It was reprised the most. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a fan. I didn't like it. It didn't, I literally at the very end of this wrote down, yeah, because the journey is the point of Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
She doesn't go many places. She literally goes from one shitty house to another shitty house to eventually working in a school and then back to the second shitty house. So no, it's like there's about, that much like, travel.
Her whole thing isn't about like, and then we just like carry on. Like that's not the message of Jane Eyre. But it was very clearly like the message of that song. And that song was very clearly like the message of the musical. Anyway, I wrote down that the very first song that little Jane sings felt like it was an Annie. And then there was the song about how basically children are, specifically Jane is gonna burn in hell for sure.
That was probably my, like, that was not my actual favorite song, but it was my favorite like comical song. Like my gosh, when Brocklehurst is in there and he's singing about like, where do bad kids go? They go down in hell. And he's doing the jazz hands, and then the Reed family joins in and they're all singing about how she's going to go to hell and doing the jazz hands. And I'm like, oh my God, what is happening?
It was so bizarre. And I actually think that I'm going to reference some of the things that I learned about Jay Richards, who's the man who adapted this into a musical and wrote this. First of all, I just want to say, Jay, if you're listening, none of this is about you. I'm so proud of you for living your dream and writing a musical.
Yeah, you honestly we are gonna doing more than we could. So bravo. Off the bat.
Rip you apart real quick for the next 50 minutes. So I read a couple of articles about him because I got bored during the musical. He claims to have watched all 19 film adaptions of Jane Eyre. Liar. There are so many more than 19. There were so many more than 19 in 2013. Stop lying to the people, Jay.
Trying to brag over here. Meanwhile, us.
Dude, you got to spend more time on the internet. There's no way that you found the very first one silent in Italian because I've been looking for it and I can't get it. So you're a liar and stop lying. This was his very first musical. He wrote the original version in 15 years prior to this coming out. So he wrote it in the late 90s. And then he set it in a drawer because he thought it was bad. And then he pulled it out 15 years later and went, you know what? This might not be bad. And then he rewrote half of it and he put it on stage in Utah. This sweet little bean in the interview is like so excited to be putting on a musical. And that's the reason why this is not about Jay and his dreams. He also mentioned in it that while he was writing this musical, so he originally wrote orchestral music, like that's what he does.
Yeah.
But he's not a musical person, but it's not the kind of music that he writes. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was reading a book about how to write musical theater while he was writing this musical.
Oh.
And in that book, they said the one story that shouldn't be adapted into a musical is Jane Eyre.
Oh my God. And he threw that book out the window. He's like, well, fuck you, because I'm already doing it.
He goes, well, that would have been nice to know 15 years ago anyway.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Incredible. Wow.
So Jay did the impossible with no experience and minimal talent. And I'm so proud of him.
Seriously. You know, he looked at a wall and he's like, God damn it, I'm going through it.
We look at our dreams and go, we should make a Jane Eyre adaptation, but we don't have the resources. Jay looks at the world and goes, I should make a Jane Eyre musical. No one wants it. It already exists and it's not going to be good. I didn't think it was good before. I don't think it's good now. Let's do it anyway.
Oh my gosh. Well, now we have something to talk about. So Lillian.
Yes.
So we've kind of started with the beginning here, right? Is there any like other kind of like initial things that you want to tackle or like address right up front?
There's so many things that I'm excited to talk about with this. I think this is a very Air Buds musical. When we were talking about Jane Eyre being a musical, I was anticipating it being leaning a little bit more into like the dark elements of Jane Eyre and like that those moments of one of the things that I like in a good musical is the way that the songs feel like a really natural progression of an emotional moment.
Yes.
And then not great musicals feel like, good God, why are they singing?
Yes.
And I had a lot of, what do you mean? Why are you going to sing about this?
Yes.
Moments in this. For example, when Mr. Broccoli starts singing, I'm like, what are we doing? What's the plan here? What's happening right now? Are you going to sing about the devil to this child, but in a really like bizarrely light tone?
Yeah.
Not a fan.
No. I'm so glad you'd mentioned that, Lillian, because I think that's where this musical failed hardest for me is I've heard people say this in like interviews and other videos before. So it's not my concept, but there's this idea where the reason someone breaks into song in a musical is because their emotions are so great that they can't communicate it by speaking. They need to sing. That's the only way that they can get that point across. And yes, there were so many key moments in Jane Eyre when a song feels necessary. And I think he missed all of those beats. Mm-hmm. And instead he's like, I'm going to have a song now to move the story along. And I'm going to have a song now because we have a big ensemble cast and we need everyone to be able to be involved in this. And he missed all the good points. I think the one song that felt appropriate to me is the song that Rochester sings when he first comes back to the house after, his first interview with Jane. And then he sings this song about how he feels haunted by this place and it's a prison that he must return to. And that was the one song that I felt where I was like, okay, yes, this is something that he feels greatly about. I thought the song was decent. I actually wrote down a lyric from it where he says, in the gentle rains of morning, I mourn for the man I might have been. And it's after he's seen Jane and he's like, oh, like, and he has that line where he's like, at 18, I was your equal. So that's the one point in this musical where I felt that our writer picked up on an emotional key point and put like music to that. Everything else I felt kind of missed the beat, but that one worked for me.
Yeah. And the other thing that was somewhat disappointing about this is I think in terms of I feel like he could have written a good play.
Mm-hmm,
like that was what was hard about it is like the moments with the music felt really unnatural, which I know some people just feel that way about musicals in general. Mm-hmm. I don't. I really like musicals, but apparently I have a very high standard for them. I wasn't aware of it. but the moments that I like in that like emotions peak and then you express that in a song, it feels like he was doing that backwards where he was like, this is a moment that needs emotion. Mm. I'm going to express that as a song as opposed to like allowing it to build to a place where it felt natural for them to start singing.
Yeah. It's
like Brocklehurst shows up and he has to be an asshole. So I'm going to make him sing as an asshole. and like you said, like, I think the more that I watched this, the more that I was like, yeah, I can't wait. I know you've listened to a little bit of the Broadway soundtrack, mostly because of the confusion that I started. I do want to say our spectacular listener who suggested the musicals, I looked back at the messages. She was super clear that they were two different musicals. I'm dumb. I didn't even like clarify that. Like, and also she's She's amazing. She's recommended a few different things. And I just want to say to her, because I know she's listening, we love watching the ones we don't like. Like, it's great. Yes, just
because
I don't like it doesn't mean I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at Jay. And it's not Jay's fault either. He's just living his dream. Anyway, I feel like it was trying to switch those two things around. And instead of take an emotional moment and share it in song, he tried to use the songs to create the emotional moment.
Yeah.
And it was just a miss.
Well, he probably missed that lesson after he yeeted his How to Write a Musical book out the window because it made him mad because it said Jane Eyre off the table.
Yeah. Don't do this, Jay, was actually, I think, the title of the book.
Yeah. So one thing I feel like we should address up front is, so I kind of made mention to this, of they had a really big ensemble cast. And because clearly they're like, well, it's hard to do, like, I don't know if this, it felt like it was bigger than a community theater production. It was probably some like actual legitimate theater in Utah. But typically you want to have a larger cast kind of show because then you can have more people involved. It's typically more interesting that way. I mean, depending, obviously, you can do an amazing thing with a very small cast of people, but they had a very large cast of people for a story that typically has at most maybe like 10 characters. So what they did with that is they filled this household of Thornfield with lots and lots of servants and staff. And the biggest number that they did in the production is when it's like discovered that Rochester is coming back with a large group of people and he's going to be hosting them at Thornfield. And so then we have this big, in my opinion, not well done number where all the staff is getting ready excitedly. It's kind of like they were trying to do sort of like a Human Again song from the Broadway version of Beauty and the Beast, where Mrs. Fairfax is like up on a table and she's directing all the servants to do this stuff. And all the maids are like doing their best ballet, which was like, it's all right. You're jumping around. And the guys are like trotting in and they're little, like, we're kind of doing a little horse dance. And at one point they got down on the ground and they were like kicking their legs off to the side. Like, hey, we're little like Russian ballet dancers. And there was like a moment where ladies jumped off of a table and they caught her. And I was like, you're really trying to make this a big dance scene. And it's just for such a little ordeal of like, let's get this house ready for some people who are coming over. That was my take anyway.
It was so rough to watch because it did feel like, well, we need a song like this. Like, well, we need a big group dance number for no reason. I'm watching this going, well, if you need a big group dance number, why don't you do a ball with all the fancy people instead of a bunch of people coming out here to prep for the ball?
Exactly.
And it also was like bizarrely like had the energy, not the quality, but the energy of like a pre-intermission song. But then like there's a big dip in the energy when we go watch Aunt Reed die quick. Mm-hmm. And just the whole the whole thing felt so weird and abrupt. And I do want to loop back because I realized that I started talking about generically why I don't like it and forgot to reference the one song that you did really like, or at least thought was good and felt more natural, which is the Rochester song. And I agree. I actually like that song as well. I was at a point when that song started going, I was like, you can't do this again, Lillian. It can't start bad. So you just rip it apart the whole time. You have to have some level of positivity. And so I felt very similarly. I liked that. And I felt like with all these adaptions, and when we talk about a different format, one of the things that you and I talk about a lot is how it doesn't have to be a one-to-one true adaptation of the story.
Yeah.
If it can lend an additional level of value to it and take advantage of this other format. And that's, I think, where that song gives us a little window into what a musical of Jane Eyre could be with the right quality, which is getting to see and feel those emotions without them expressing it on their face or with words, but instead through song.
Yes.
And I think Rochester is one of those characters that could do that so well.
Yes.
And I think this gives us a little snippet of that, of the idea of this man who's sort of trapped and sad. Mm-hmm. And Jane is his opportunity to have this happy life and all of that stuff. And honestly, if that song had been, if like an equivalent of that song for Jane had been instead of that journey song, which I don't feel like does that for her. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it expresses what Jane really wants.
Yeah.
Like Jane doesn't want a journey. She wants dignity.
Yeah, exactly. And she wants someone to see her and accept her for who she is and love her. Yeah.
Yeah. And he took that idea and switched to this journey. And honestly, there was a couple of songs like the dance number, like the Journey song, that felt like generic musical songs instead of a Jane Eyre musical song.
Yeah.
And it just was very close. Like it was like dancing near something that could be good. Yes. So I'm excited about the Broadway one as well from this. But
I will save most of what I have to say about that when we eventually do that episode. But just to give you a little bit of hope, the songs that I've listened to, so I've listened about halfway through the Broadway soundtrack, and they do that well so far, where they do pick up on those key moments, those key emotional things. Also, the guy who plays Rochester had played the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway before, and he's got that great kind of emotional gravitas when he sings, and I think that's very appropriate for a kind of like, oh, what's a similar like musical character to a Rochester? The Phantom. Yeah, that's great. So I thought we have a lot to look forward to.
That's when I was thinking about this as an adaptation to a musical, I was like, I don't know that you can like, because I think a little bit more of like a Singing in the Rain, like fun kind of musical, or like Funny Girl, which again, Funny Girl has like really dramatic, sad songs too. I just think those are the musicals that jumped to mind immediately, like almost the caricature of a musical, which unfortunately I feel like this is. And I was like, oh, but like there's like Les Mis and there's Phantom of the Opera and there's these musicals that tackle these darker
stories. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't watch Sweeney Todd because of the whole, he does lots of murdering is my understanding.
Too didn't spooky for Lillian, but a great musical.
But like, though, so that was, I was like, oh, it's going to be like that energy. And it's like, no.
Nope. No. Yeah. I think you're right. There were too many lighthearted like scenes and songs that they focused on for a story that is not very lighthearted. I wrote down something specific. I think a big opportunity missed. I wrote that down a lot as I was going through. I'm like, you just missed an opportunity. Why did you do it this way? So the burning bed scene, the way they did it, I did kind of like the sets. I liked the set of Thornfield. Mm-hmm. That was pretty and nice. Mm-hmm. And people were walking all over it and going through different doorways and they had multiple levels. And so that was cool. I thought it was interesting when they did the burning bed scene, they simply like kind of lowered the lights on the stage and then just kind of put flickering sort of firelight against one wall. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for her to like, then it all happened off stage of her like putting out the flames because they couldn't afford fire and things like that, obviously.
Well, because also don't set fire to things in a theater. That's just like a rule of thumb.
No, true. But there's really clever ways of doing things like that. Mm-hmm. Like you can get these big like gossamer like pieces of fabric and like put the light right behind it and like wave those around as they kind of like pull up like the side of the bedpost. I could direct this. I swear to God. Like,
don't worry about it. I've already started on my production of Jane Eyre the Musical.
So that's kind of one of our first big tender moments is they have this conversation on the staircase of, you know, him saying like, you saved my life. I owe you this debt. What you're quitting me so soon, all this stuff. And they said that all with words and then they leave. And then there's a moment where she kind of like looks happy at the bottom of the stairs before she goes into her bedroom. And I'm like, huge missed opportunity here, fella. This is perfect for a duet, in which case it can be moments of them not necessarily singing to one another, but kind of projecting out to the audience their inner feelings of him being like, oh my God, she saved my life. I'll dedicate myself to her forever. And she's like, oh my God, he's so close. I can feel his heartbeat. He's touching my hands. What are these feelings? And like, they could have done this amazing, like in our minds kind of musical number just to them simply be like, well, we shake hands and now we leave. And that was totally missed. How dare you?
Well, and I think that that's what I meant earlier when I was like, he did a decent job of a play of Jane Eyre. Like, I feel like he could have done a play of Jane Eyre pretty well. Cause like that moment on the stairs, I thought that was a clever way to not have a sea of fire and like not have to figure out how to do that on stage. Mm-hmm. But also like we see her wake up. We see her like, I like agree with you. I like the way that they have the set. I like the way they utilize the set. So her like going upstairs and getting him out and then them talking on the balcony area. I thought that was all really well done. And so then I agree with you. It would have been an opportunity for a song, but that's the thing is like, it didn't feel unnatural that there wasn't a song there.
Yeah.
And all the other moments when there were songs, it felt really unnatural. Grace Poole gets two songs.
We need to talk about Madness Up the Stairs, which gets a reprise. Okay. So For context, if you haven't seen this musical, which why haven't you seen this musical yet, guys? Go out and watch it. We have the scene where the next morning, Jane confronts Grace Poole, who is ominously sewing the ruined curtains from the bed that Jane believes she is responsible for the fire for. And they have this little threat, right? And then Jane goes away. But then Grace Poole sings a song and the whole like staff joins in singing this song about the madness up the stairs. And she's like, there's bats in the belfry, rats in the attic. What's going on? It isn't me. Like that instantly takes blame away from Grace. So now the audience is like, oh, okay. So Grace is not the woman who burnt the bed. And also it's later said at his like proposal, no, at the wedding / confrontation / confession explanation scene, he says to Jane, he's like, no doubt you've heard the rumors of the mad person at the house. And I'm like, what? This is what? So it like ruined all of that. I'm like, no. She can't just believe that there's a crazy person mysteriously in the home already. And then Oops, it's your wife. That has to all be a surprise.
Yeah. And there is like, I felt like the first time she sang that song, there was an element of like, I'm crazy and upstairs. Like, I think that's what that was sort of supposed to be, but also like the house is crazy. We don't know what's happening. Like, which was just the green lighting that they did for that too. I felt like was, oh, so we're blading on Disney's villains are green whole shtick right now. So that was bizarre. And that's another moment where like, in terms of how that moment plays and all the different adaptions that we've watched and all this stuff, that was a decent moment that mm-hmm. played there. Like mm-hmm. the way that they balanced the, what do you mean you don't lock your door? You should probably lock your door. Like that's tough to pull off. And they did it. Mm-hmm. And then.
my God.
That was just sort of bizarre. And I also think another part of this that we've never watched Jane Eyre with an audience's reaction before. Mm-hmm. And there was a handful of moments where the audience laughed. And I was like, that might be a soft chuckle moment, but it's definitely not a full laugh. Like I got it. It was interesting to see when like he says, do you think me handsome, Jane? And the audience laughed at that. And then she said no, and they laughed at that as well. Mm-hmm. Like that was like fun to see people's reaction to that banter because it lightens lines that can be interpreted as like him being an ass or them having witty banter. And it establishes that super solidly is witty banter. But there's an element of like, no, this is like a real line. Like there was a moment during the proposal in particular where Jane says something, or he says, do you not believe me? And she says, not at all. And the audience laughs. And I'm like,
no,
that's not funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I felt like that was to me indicative of the space that this musical put the audience in mm-hmm. was not a space where they were taking it seriously.
Yeah.
And so when those lines that should play seriously come up, mm-hmm. they read them as comedy because they read it as a lighter situation than it is.
Agreed. Fabulous assessment of that. I completely agree. There was, I thought to myself too, a lot of chuckling, a lot of laughter in like early scenes. And there's even the characters of, isn't it John and who's like the stable hand.
John and Sophie.
And Sophie the maid. So these are like new characters that they've introduced to have kind of like a sub romantic plot line in addition to the Jane and Rochester plot. And there was a lot of comedy that was put on their shoulders as well. Not like actually good haha comedy, but just sort of like they say a line and the audience chuckles about it. So
yeah, because there's a moment where a child confuses the word blossom for the word bosom.
Yes.
So that was really needed.
Yes. Great. A great addition there, buddy.
Also, sorry, just another travesty. How does Adele not have a song?
Yeah, seriously. She literally asks, she's like, can I sing for you? And they're like, shut up, go away.
And I'm like, yeah, it's not like it's a musical.
Yeah, seriously. Although that one moment was pretty good where it's at the party and Blanche is singing and like Adele is there dancing along and Blanche is like trying to push her off screen to be like, stop stealing my moment, child.
And I thought that Jane was pretty good. Laughing in the background was good. But I think that those are the moments, like the John and Sophie thing, the Adele, like making Adele laugh. We lose some of the like gothic mystery and the serious passionate romance, and we get more of the like lighthearted comedy musical,
yes,
which is not what Jane Eyre is.
Yes, exactly.
It's not a bad story. It's just not what this is.
Right. I also noticed there were points too where a scene would end and like people definitely were supposed to clap at that point, but like they didn't. Like they missed the cue. They're like, wait, is it done? And the point that I really wrote that down is where after Jane leaves and she's supposed to be like out on the moors, and then we get a brief reprise of the song that Helen sings. And it's like she's put in this weird light. And so it's almost like she's seeing her ghost. And then like the lights fade to black and no one clapped because I think the audience interpreted that as Jane dying. But then there she is again. Everyone's like, whoa, is she dead? She just saw her dead friend. So is she dead? And so it's like, yeah, I think it just wasn't communicated well to the audience how they were supposed to react.
Very weird, very unnecessary moment, which the other thing that I wanted to mention about weird not necessary moments, you mentioned the John and Sophie love story. I might have been very bored at this point in the musical because it's also 2.5 hours of actual like plot singing, like actual musical. So like being at this would probably take 3+ hours. So I literally wrote down, this is so deeply unnecessary, but I actually really liked the two of them as a character, and I really liked their love story. And I now want to write a new version of like a Jane Eyre adjacent story about John and Sophie living in this house, not knowing what the hell is going on.
Oh my God.
And like them falling in love and like finding out that Rochester is dating and in love with the governess and going to marry her and be like, that's wild. Mm-hmm. Also, Mrs. Fairfax is always so weird and defensive of Grace Poole, and I think she might be full crazy because that laughter is like super creepy, my dude. Like, I just love the idea of these two living in this house, not being a part of any of the like scenes that we know about, but just like them falling in love and being here, and like the house they live in burns down. Like they find out their boss is fully married and tried to do a bigamy, like. I would read the crap out of that.
It'd be kind of like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern sort of thing,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly that.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. Just like side characters commenting and like kind of observing the ridiculous plot lines of the main story.
And I also like their love story. Like, I didn't dislike their love story. I just was like, what are you doing? That's what I felt like every time they were on. Because John is like, he's very similar to a character we've seen in a lot of other things, but I don't think he's actually a character in the book, although we'll find out soon, won't we?
Yes, we will. I thought his accent was all right. Like,
yes,
he maintained that pretty well. So he was doing like, it was like kind of a Scottish accent.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Scottish. Mm-hmm. I also really, this is just me and my own headcanon, when he first came on stage, it was zoomed out a bit. Like, it took us a while to get zoomed in enough to actually see John's face. And his general like aesthetic is very John Mulaney. And his voice has a similar like rhythm to John Mulaney's. So my headcanon watching John on stage was that he was played by comedian John Mulaney in amazing 2013 in Utah.
Amazing. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to do this for a bit in between my tours.
I've got the Scottish accent. I need to use it.
So a few things to note about like the pre-intermission break. So I hope that you were happy that we saw Aunt Reed in a death bonnet. Classic.
Yes. I literally went, yay, death bonnet.
Yay, death bonnet. Again, talking about how our writer doesn't understand when songs are appropriate or not, because literally Aunt Reed dies in the room while Jane is standing there. Jane walks 5 feet across the stage and then sings a reprise of Journey On. She's like, my aunt is dead. And it's just like, that's inappropriate. You're a nice lady. It seems like you're happy that your aunt died.
Well, and the thing that is like, this is what I mean about like, it's so close to a good thing, mm-hmm, because if instead of that song being about a journey, it was about her desire to find love and acceptance.
Yes.
And her desire to live a true, authentic life and find love and acceptance, walking out of that room would have been a perfect moment to reprise that song, because watching your Aunt Reed die, giving her forgiveness, having her reject that, and exemplifying all of the things that were so broken about your childhood, and then walking out of that room and going, I have always wanted love and acceptance, and I found that at Thornfield, and now I get to go back to Thornfield, mm-hmm, where I have the thing I always wanted as a child, that would have been a great moment.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that's not what that song was, Jay.
No, she walked out the room and she went, send me away. And just starts like journeying away. And it's just like, come on.
Oh my God. It's so close, Jay. Just shy, Jay.
Oh my God. Okay. So then like one of the next songs we get is, I think, supposed to be like Rochester's big, like love declaration song, which he sings to himself after Jane comes home and then says hi and then leaves. And then he just sings, but the lyrics are all just literally like singing about nature. And it's like a very vague kind of like, the willow is weeping and the river is singing and so am I and the sun is out. And I'm like, I think the guy who wrote this musical had written that song in particular outside of Jane Eyre the musical, and then he's like, well, I like this song, so I'm gonna put it in here and we'll say it's his love song. I'm like, he's not singing about love, he's singing about how much he loves nature walks.
Like, yes, I'm agreeing with Piper so hard right now. Like, you guys couldn't see it, but I was like gesturing with my hands. Like, I know that's not how podcasts work, but I need Piper to know how right she was. Absolutely. Like 100%. There's so many moments in this that feel like generic musical instead of Jane Eyre. And that's absolutely one of them. Also, can you remind me, because I was having a moment where I wasn't sure if it was a slip around the stairs moment or if it was actually how Jane Eyre works. But does she usually go home to Aunt Reed dying before Mason or after Mason?
That is usually after. Mason comes first. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was because it was so bizarre, the idea that like, the timing of all of it was so weird because Rochester shows up, they do the money scene, which they, again, like there's so many moments where I'm like, if this was just a play, Jay gets it.
Yeah.
But he's missing the point because that moment is so well done. Like that's so well done. And then again, like that could have been a fucking song, Jay. But then, so then Jane leaves and I'm like, oh, so they're going to skip Mason. Interesting. Like interesting choice. But I guess they had Bertha singing on the stairs about spooky things. So maybe they don't need a Mason. And then we come back. They've all been staying in the house for 3 weeks because Jane was gone for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. We then see the whole party and I was like, weird that this is still happening. But sure, this man was just entertaining a bunch of folks at his house to make his governess jealous while she was gone.
Exactly. That's usually what happens is she leaves and he's like, okay, the farce is over. Everyone get out of my house. Like if she's not here to see you, then there's no point of you being here.
So they all were just chilling, waiting for Jane to come back so they could make her jealous. Then Mason comes, he fully pulls a 1957 Jane Eyre. I know there was a screaming at this party, but don't worry about it. He doesn't go fully upstairs to check. Like he like comes back down and he's like his classic excuse of like, it was just a servant with a bad dream. If you go to bed, we can help them. Like, please leave. He like uses that excuse, but he didn't go all the way up the stairs. So how do you know that, my dude?
Like, okay. I have to point out, I think the best line in this entire musical happens in relation to what you just described, Lillian, because when they go back to the house to reveal Bertha, the line that Rochester says to Mason is he says, you remembered this place, Mason. You were bit and stabbed here. That's what he says to him. Like, oh my God. I love it. I love it so much. I want that on a t-shirt.
Oh my God. And this, we've talked about Mason a few different times and there's like two Masons. There's like, I'm sort of an ass Mason. And then there's whiny little bitch Mason. And this is such a whiny little bitch Mason. Oh my God.
I need to amend what I said. I think Thornfield needs to have a gift shop. And there are t-shirts like that, that he gets to collect when he leaves. It's like, I was bit and stabbed by Bertha. At Thornfield. I only got this stupid shirt.
When we make merch, it's going to be Thornfield and it's going to say, remember when you were bit instead.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Yes. I love it so much.
DM us if you want one. We're definitely getting them for ourselves at least.
Obviously, we will be so successful that we'll open a theme park.
Yes.
A Thornfield theme park. It'll be just a haunted house and you can go and like, experience the rides.
And we'll have a theater where we put on our corrected Jane Eyre the musical, Jane Eyre the new musical.
Yep.
And then we will also be putting on the Jane and Sophie and John side story musical. I'm pretty stoked about that. It will also be a musical.
Yes. 100%.
Oh my God. Jane has a great wedding bonnet, although they keep her veil over her head the whole time.
Yeah.
Poor actress had to act with a veil over her head the entire time. The song that she has after they find out about Bertha, which we don't see Bertha on stage, which I think they still played that okay.
She at one point runs out and attacks Rochester and this is instantly pulled off. We see her briefly. She's there for like 5 seconds.
There's a chance that at this point I was doing other things.
Yeah. Lillian is doing her taxes, cleaning plates.
It was 2.5 hours of my life, you guys. And it was, I can listen to bad music and also put together some stuff I bought on Amazon. Amazing.
I made a note of, you're talking about the song that Jane sings after she finds out, where she's just kind of like in a daze, which obviously understandable, but she's sadly singing, staring at the audience while maids undress her. They like take off her wedding clothes and then they put her back into her sad black like frock. And I'm like, wow, you really have a whole team of ladies maids there, Jane. Like, you can't undress yourself.
Which, like, maybe they needed to do that, but that costume didn't seem that hard to take off. And I feel like Jane would have just taken it off herself, but whatever.
Yeah.
But she did. She had a good bonnet. I would have flipped the veil back at some point. Like, I would have made it seem like the wedding got far enough that they could flip the veil back, which, like, I think technically that's not when it happens in a wedding service, but we're not really hung up on facts here, guys. Mm-hmm. But that was a good one. Jane also has a really good rich lady bonnet later. They've got good sad orphan bonnets. Blanche has a top hat at one point.
Very nice.
So decent bonnet watch in this, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I thought the costumes were all right. I liked what they did with sets. So it wasn't all bad.
And like I said, the moments in between the songs, I actually really liked. I think in terms of a play, they did a pretty decent job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
I
generic
agree.
Musical 101.
Hey, one thing that stood out to me, by the way, in the early childhood scenes when we have Helen on stage, did you notice how slouchy Helen was? And I think it's partially because she was played by a teenager, because she was probably a better singer, but they wanted her to be like a child. But every time I saw her, I was like, Jesus, stand up straight, girl.
She was
like,
also sick acting.
Yeah.
So she was sick. And as we all know, when you're sick, you slouch.
I guess so. She just had her neck like bent over. And I was like, boy.
They didn't have her do any cough acting, which is like the main way we know Helen's dying.
Well, she was coughing throughout.
She wasn't cough. She didn't cough nearly as much as most Helen's coughed. There was a lot of Miss Temple being like, hey, you're super sick. You probably shouldn't be standing. And she goes, I'm not. I'm slouching.
Lillian was in the audience of this show and she had a little like clicker in her hand. And for every cough, she'd make a click. And she's like, not nearly enough. No, I'm scribbling down.
I don't know if you know about Helen, but Helen coughs all the time.
I just have a few more notes about when she's with St. John and her cousins. Yes. One thing that I did find a little interesting is when St. John is like telling Jane the story of this other person, Jane Eyre, because at this point she's going by Jane Elliot. He tells it almost like, it sounds to me kind of like the way the prince reacts after Cinderella runs away, where he's like, he's got flyers all over the country looking for you with a big reward. It's just like, what? I'm like, wait a second. There'd be a lot of like ladies showing up at Thornfield. It's like, oh, I'm Jane Eyre. See, let me try on that slipper, prince.
I'm now picturing these posters as Rochester drew a little fairy nymph stick figure.
He just like took a picture of Tinkerbell from the internet and he's like scribbled brown over her hair and it's like, that's it, that's her.
He like describes her as he like feels like she is, like all the ways that he talks about her, like that's how he's like, she's a creature of the forest.
And everyone's like, God. Dude, are you crazy? She didn't dream this lady up. The way that St. John lays out the facts of this whole situation, he first tells the story, he then tells Jane that she has acquired great wealth, and then he proposes to her like immediately after. And the way, if I didn't know the story before, the way I would read that, I'm like, oh, he just wants her money. That's all he wants. Like, he finds out that she has money and then he's like, marry me.
And also, like, Jane immediately gives, like, they tell the story in such detail that I was like, oh, they're going to make them cousins for sure. Because whenever we get that level of detail of the story about like, why would St. John have gotten this letter? Like, what's the point of that? That's where we find out, well, they're cousins and blah, blah, blah. So like, why wouldn't we have known that? Because she does still immediately give away all of her money without thinking about it for a single second.
Right. Which And she even has a line where she compares the girls. She's like, oh, we're sisters. And we did not have enough stage time or meaningful conversations for us to believe that she actually felt that these people who took her in are as good as family to give them all of her money.
The timing in these moments, which they do say she's been there for 2 months, but the girls are supposed to be leaving like immediately after she shows up, which, by the way, they do give Sad Jane warm milk, which, as we all know, heals all wounds.
Amazing. Yes.
But they sit. Jane is found outside asleep on their front. This is what they established. She was found outside asleep on their front steps. They bring her inside. They talk to her. They interrogate her while she's still in wet clothes. They figure out a job for her while she's still in wet clothes. They have this whole conversation. The sisters talk about leaving. They like argue with Sinjin about the job. And then at the end of that scene, they go, let's get you out of these wet things. And I'm like, you what?
I think Jay realized that he spent 20 minutes on the staff dancing so that the house could get ready. And he's like, oh, that's right. I have to put this moment in the play probably. So just shoved it all in there at the very end. And
like, just Jay, like as a heads up for next time you write a musical, what you could have done is had her like have them find her, put her in new dry clothes, and then give her the warm milk and talk to her.
There you go.
Instead of having this conversation while she's in the wet clothes.
Seriously.
Just a hot tip from me to Jay. Let's talk about Sinjin's song.
Okay, go for it.
I have no thoughts. Did you say I have no thoughts?
I have no thoughts. I think at that point I was pretty checked out too. And I was like, okay.
It was so broccoli of him. It was so terrible. None of it was that interesting. It was so bizarre that his sisters, like the way that they play it in the movies where we've seen more of Sinjin and his sisters. And I'm so curious because it's always been so different. I'm so curious about how that plays in the book. But the way that they play it in most of the movies is like, oh, we want you to marry our brother because then he won't go on this mission and like he'll stay. But we'd love for you to like actually be our sister. So you should definitely, definitely marry our brother. Mm-hmm. The way that this played was like, she's our sister. You fucking leave, but you leave us, Jane.
Yeah.
Because we love her. We couldn't care less about you.
I'm remembering now that they incorporated specific lines in the song of why Jane couldn't survive in India. Like they literally sang about like, you'll get trampled by an elephant or drowned in a river. Just like all this stuff.
Well, and also like, I know that this is what like missionaries at this time thought, but they keep talking about how it's like this like ungodly land. And I was like, let's not drive that point home in 2013.
Yeah. Definitely used like the word savage and things like that.
It was, yeah. I was like, well, okay. I realize that we're establishing Sinjin as an ass, but that's rough one, huh? To make them all assholes and just like, you can't go to India. And I'm like, I mean, you could go to India, but not for the reason Sinjin's talking about. That there's another moment in this scene where the audience laughs when they shouldn't, which is the you're made for labor, not love line.
Yeah,
the audience laughs at that.
Yeah. That's a more like a yikes. Ooh, no, no. moment. And
I was like, That's not, you missed it, guys. Which like to me speaks back to what we talked about with all the other moments where it's like the tone is so missed in this musical.
My final thoughts are just real quick. We already talked about how Jane comes back. Although, okay, really funny. So she comes back to the cottage because the mansion is burned down and she talks with John and Sophie. And she's like, where's Mr. Rochester? And their gut reaction was, I don't think he'll be able to see you. And like, I would have been like, ooh, I mean, because he's blind. I was like, that is so fucking funny. And the audience didn't laugh because I think a lot of them didn't know the book. And so they don't know that he's blind when she returns. And so like, I'm like, that is meant to be a joke, I think.
We would have been laughing so hard for so much of this musical. We would have ruined the experience for so many people.
We would have been drunk watching this musical. So yeah, we would have been like, ah, yeah, bad news bears.
God.
But so anyway, she goes to him. He touches up her face. They sing Journey On together. And then I hated this choice. The ensemble cast walks back onto the stage and they all join in on the Journey On song. And the placement of the cast on stage next to them was awful because Blanche was directly next to them. So here's this moment between Jane and Rochester where it's supposed to be them alone. We love each other. We can be each other with each other at last. And yet here is Blanche standing right behind Jane and the entire cast is singing with them. Bad choice.
And it's not like there's moments in musicals where like they do a song as part of the bows, mm-hmm. which was sort of what this was supposed to be, but there wasn't a hard enough cut between the moment between Rochester and Jane being like, we love each other, and the rest of the cast coming out and singing this song, which is not the point of Jane Eyre. Like it was so, that was the moment where I was like, okay, Jay doesn't understand the point of Jane Eyre. And so like that was wild to me. Another moment that I want to talk about that I also would have laughed so hard because it's so funny to me, but nobody in the theater laughed because they don't have a good sense of humor, which is Jane walks up to him and says, you must be cold. And Rochester goes, John?
Yeah, I know. I was like, are you deaf too?
He goes, John, Sophie? And I'm like, no.
Oh my God.
It makes sense that you might think it was Sophie. But you definitely John. Know that wasn't John.
The first John? Name. Yeah, it's not only is it a feminine voice, but also not Scottish. Oh, you missed it so bad.
Oh, what a bean. Anyway, yeah. Jay, you did your best. And honestly, what I will give Jay a lot of credit for is he lived his dreams.
Yep.
And not all of us have the courage to do that. And mm-hmm. I would just suggest that Jay, journey on, man.
Yeah, journey on, dude. Keep on going. I also have to there's another musical, which is not nearly as common in the popular zeitgeist, a musical that I love called Ragtime. And they have a song called Journey On, which is 10 billion times better than this. So every time we say Journey On, I think of that good song first. I'm like, oh no, wait, it was the bad one. Okay. So I don't know. Who knows how much of this he kind of maybe took from other things.
Another musical fact that I think that you'll enjoy is one that I learned in researching about Jay Richards and his whole deal, which is, interestingly enough, at the same time that Jane Eyre the musical was premiering in Utah, in generically Europe, there's no more details in this article other than Europe, so I'm going to guess it was not a large city. he had a second musical premiering.
Oh.
Which was also an adaptation of a classic piece of literature that I associate strongly with Piper Cleveland. Do you want to guess what musical it was?
Little Women?
It was Little Women!
Oh my God! Another off-Broadway musical, because Little Women has a Broadway musical as well.
Yeah, it was opened for the first time in Europe.
This guy's got some odd connections.
Weird dude, huh, bud?
Yeah, I don't know.
This whole thing is so interesting. Not interesting enough to spend too much more time on.
And maybe this is a silly thing to assume. Like, I would think the same thing if, like, it took place in Texas. I'd be like, maybe he's a cowboy. But, like, because it's in Utah, I'm like, I wonder if he's Mormon. Like, I wonder how many people in the audience were Mormon. And they're like, so what if he's already married? It's fine. I know they don't do that anymore. Just kidding.
Or maybe, I think it was
I've just offended
some
all
of them
our...
Don't. Some
yeah,
of
okay.
them do.
Okay.
It's
okay.
A six of one, half a dozen of the other situation.
Alrighty. Well, if I just offended our Utah listeners, I apologize. We'll give you a free you were bit and stabbed here t-shirt once we make them.
I was bit and stabbed here. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Remember that?
Remember that time that you were bit and stabbed by your sister / my wife who lives in the attic of my house?
Amazing.
And Mason comes back with, no, that does not ring a bell.
Okay. Well, that's all my notes. I'm ready to rate this bad boy if you are.
Yes, I'm so ready.
So I feel like giving it a 3 is maybe too harsh. So I think I'm going to give it a pity 4 because I like that he tried. I think a 4 is what I will give it. A 4 out of 10 ballerinas because they really tried to do that ballet in there. So 4 out of 10 ballerinas okay. for me.
So I apparently liked it more than you. And while the songs did not do great, I liked the sets and the costumes and like the in-between the song moments well enough mm-hmm. that I actually gave it a 6 out of 10.
Oh, nice.
Because I do feel like there were moments that played really well,
yeah.
but there were a lot of moments that did not play.
I think, yeah, the reason for my low score is I think I went in with high musical expectations
yeah.
and I was greatly let down. So
Well, you know, Jay shouldn't have said that it was a musical if it was going to be a bad one.
yeah, how dare you, dude?
I'm going to make it 6 out of 10 soft songs.
Nice.
And we'll figure out how I'm going to represent that visually. So follow us on Instagram if you want a picture of me as a child in a bonnet. And also, how did I figure out how to do soft songs visually?
Soft songs. If it was me, I'd have a picture of soft serve ice cream and then music notes coming off of it.
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah.
I'll figure that out. Do you want to tell our lovely listeners what we're going to be doing next time?
I absolutely do. So we've done enough of putting our foot in our mouth on this podcast of talking about and making assumptions about what is and what is not from the source material. So gosh darn it, listeners, we decided to go and read this book. So Lillian and I have started reading Jane Eyre, and on next week's episode, we are going to be discussing some of the early chapters, specifically the chunk of the story that focuses on Jane's childhood. Because Lillian went through and kind of broke up the book based on these kind of different key points in Jane's life and in this story. So we're starting with childhood. Which chapters are those, Lillian?
That is chapter 1 through chapter 11. So up to 11. So we're reading through 10.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. So we are going to finish reading that, and then we're going to talk about the book, which so far I am loving, and I can't wait to go into detail about everything. So
yeah, I will say I know we've talked about this previously, the idea of should you watch a movie or read a book first? And we've talked about both of our experiences with that. And I will say, similar to how I felt about Pride and Prejudice, where I was really glad that I'd watched the Pride and Prejudice movie before I read the book. Mm-hmm. I'm very glad that I had the context for Jane Eyre, because it is a wonderfully dense text where there's just a lot in here. Mm-hmm. And I also want to call out for people who want to read along with the parts of the book for us, I will be posting on our website as well as on our social what the different breakouts of the chunks are. Mm-hmm. And we've divided it into 5 total chunks, and we're going to be spreading those out over the next few months, kind of intermixed with our different episodes where we watch adaptions. If you really are interested in reading the book and listening along with a podcast, Air Guide is a great podcast. I think that is the name of her Instagram,
I think it's the Jane Eyre Files is the name of the podcast.
I'm 90% sure you're right, but I've gotten it wrong before.
We don't want to say the wrong thing.
Jane Eyre Files. You're right. It's Jane Eyre Files. Mm-hmm. She's an amazing expert on Jane Eyre. Every time you Google something about Jane Eyre adaptions or the book or anything like that, like, I always end up on these blogs that I'm like, Charlotte again, which is fantastic. It's so amazing. She's all over the internet talking about this, and her podcast, she reads, goes through chapter by chapter with her husband, and they talk about Jane Eyre. It's his first time reading the book. Really, really great. I've listened to a couple of episodes again while reading the book, and we are so excited to talk about this.
Absolutely. I would also recommend checking out, I mentioned this on last week's episode and probably before, but the Hot and Bothered podcast, their third season was all about Jane Eyre. And every episode they dissect, I think they go chapter by chapter. And these two women are both authors. They're New York Times bestsellers. And with every episode, because they're kind of, their whole point is to ask, is this book feminist? Does it hold up to modern day feminist ideals? Is it okay to give it to our young daughters? And how should we talk about that? And they also, they kind of have different themes and historical things that every episode they consult experts on and have them tell us about different points in history and what this was like from the reader's perspective or the writer's perspective at the time when Jane Eyre came out. So also a fantastic listen. But yeah, screw those guys. We're talking about it now.
Yeah. Well, I think that similar to Jane Eyre as a story in general, as we've talked about, like, it's so, there's so much depth to it. There's so many different perspectives to take on it. And I think if you listen to our podcast, it's not going to be that hard to figure out. Our take is going to be a lot based off of how did this text adapt into different films. And we'll be referencing some of those things as well as our opinions on the text. But there's so many ways to approach this. So if you're someone who really loves Jane Eyre, I think you listen to all of it.
Yeah.
Really, really get obsessed like we have. get that Stockholm syndrome, BB, because I now am obsessed with this story. And from re-listening to our first episode, I really hated it.
I can't wait to go back. I'm very excited. But until then, if you have lots to tell us on your opinions, send us an email. We are airbuds@gmail.com. And you can find us on all major social platforms at Airbuds.
But yeah, thank you guys so much for sticking with us. And we're excited to continue this journey with you.
Absolutely. Journey on, guys.